Hello, and welcome to the DLTV podcast. My name's Andrew Williamson.
And I'm Mel Cashin.
This episode is part of a series that will focus on what is going on in the digital learning and teaching. We have some exciting podcasts planned for the rest of 2018, including taking some of the authors of articles in the DLTV journal, keynotes from the DigiCon conference, and finding out what is happening in some of our member schools. Hi, Mel. How are you going?
Good. It's been a while, Andrew. We did promise we were going to get a podcast in before the end of last year, but we didn't quite get there.
I know. But that's just that typical end of year thing. You know, you think, oh, I've got all this time, and all of a sudden it just gets sucked into that end of year vortex. It's
But it always disappears very quickly, doesn't it?
Oh, man. I don't know. Like, can you believe, what is it? Is it week six now?
I'm
going crazy. It feels like I've just started, and I know time has slipped, but we're here, and I've just got to keep going. What about you? How's it going for you?
Yeah, it's been frantic start, as it always is, and we're just starting to really get into the groove of things now. But it is funny. We did talk at my school today about how the holidays are a distant memory. Like, where'd they go?
I know. Where's that beach? You know, where's that time for that book that I was reading and I never finished? So I'm like, oh no, I should finish books. That's my biggest problem.
But we do have a really exciting podcast series for 2018. I know you and I have both been planning ahead already, and we've got some amazing things that are going to be happening. So I'm really excited to be back.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited. I'm really super excited about our first guest today, which is Chris Hart from Unstuck Learning Design. Hello, Chris. How are you going?
Hello. How are you guys going?
Really good, Chris.
Wonderful.
So excited to have you along. So we can announce tonight on our podcast that Chris is actually one of our DigiCon keynotes.
I'm giving myself a round of applause. I'm so excited to do that. Thank you so much for having me on DigiCon. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, so we're really, really exciting. There's lots happening with DigiCon already, and it's fantastic to have you here, Chris, and talking about it. But, Chris, you and I actually go a fair way back, in a sense.
Way back.
So you moved from the UK in or around about 2011, and I remember before that actually – like connecting with you on Twitter, and one of the things that you were doing as I think you were making the move and thinking about moving over here was that that you made those connections. So you put it out there on Twitter, and you were working with some pretty amazing educators in England at the time, and knew that you were going to be moving out here, and then just put it out on Twitter, and it was a really amazing way to make some of those connections and to catch up with people and really know what you were sort of getting into, I guess, in the differences between the UK system and being in the Australian system of education and the things that were happening. And I'll always attest to how amazing Twitter is for doing those sorts of things. But it's been quite amazing to reflect, like it's probably, 6 or 7 years since you've been here now, the amazing things that you've done. So I know things that I've been involved with you in different things around the Google Academy, design thinking, solo, working at the Monash Monash School and the Science School and doing stuff online there. And so you've really fitted a lot into the time that you've been in Australia. Can you tell me a little bit about the things that you've done in the last 6 or 7 years?
Yeah, definitely. I think just reflecting back on the way that we connected on Twitter back in the day, it made me really think about how powerful that was as a force for good. I think in education when Twitter first came out, to be honest now, sometimes I look at some of the Twitter chats, especially back in the UK, and there's kind of this whole thing in Twitter now that it's okay to really kind of bag people and say some quite mean things about people. But back at the start, it was such a powerful community where we were all about sharing great ideas. We were all about building networks and really being supportive of each other as educators. And I was lucky enough back in the UK, I had a job as an assistant head teacher in charge of personalized learning in what I think is one of the really fantastic schools in the UK, you know, 2,500 kids in a former mining village. So it wasn't always easy, but we really focused on learning and technology. And we built this network within our school, which then became a kind of part of that bigger TeachMeet network. And then Twitter was happening at the same time. So we were organizing TeachMeets and tweeting about it, and people were traveling to come and hang out and share wonderful things about education. So when it came to consider moving my family and myself across to Australia, it kind of seemed a natural thing to say on Twitter, like, hello, I'm coming to Australia. Where are the awesome educators in Australia, which there are so many on Twitter, as well as not on Twitter. But it was just wonderful to connect with people. And early doors, I remember you and I, Mel, we went out and had a drink and had just a chat and a catch up. It's probably a bit weird to get on social media and say, I've never met you before, but I think you must be okay. So let's catch up for a drink and chat about learning. So it was a bit odd, but it was such a powerful thing, I think. And then when I got here, I got a job as the leading teacher for personalized learning at John Monash. And that was kind of free rein to look at, okay, we've got lots of data, or data, as you people would say. So we've got lots of data, and we've got pedagogy, and we've got these amazing spaces at John Monash. How do we kind of make sure that we're giving the best deal to every child, and how do we use really powerful pedagogies to personalize learning, to give kids different pathways, and then to understand their growth through the use of data? And that was kind of my role, which was exciting. I guess from there, I got involved in the I applied for the Google Teacher Academy in 2013 and was lucky enough to get into that. And that opened up a lot of doors in terms of being able to support other teachers in using Google technologies. And from there, I guess there were lots of opportunities to work with other teachers. And that caused a little bit of, in my own mind, not at all in my work, but it caused in my mind to kind of, is this what I want to do? Do I want to go out and support other teachers outside of schools, outside of my own school? And that played on my mind for a little while. And in between times, I was lucky enough to set up the Emerging Sciences Victoria online science school, which was just an amazing experience looking at using Google Apps and web conferencing to have children in rural and regional Australia learn things like astrophysics and quantum physics and bioinformatics and all these cool science subjects that aren't really covered in the curriculum. So I was loving doing that, but it came to a point of thinking, you know, do I continue doing the job that I really love, or do I look for the next challenge, which for me was kind of starting my own business and getting out and helping schools. And so in 2015, I took a year's leave from John Monash with the blessing of my principal, who's an amazing principal, and started up my own business, which is Unstuck Learning Design. So from there, I kind of have done lots of bits in Google for education training. But now I'm really kind of doing a lot more around pedagogy, design thinking, assessment and growth ladders using solar taxonomy. And have got some wonderful kind of partner schools that I work with. And then some organizations that I work with as well, like Asia Education Foundation, which is very exciting, and then still do quite a bit of work with Google. So it's very varied and exciting, and in a very selfish way, extremely fulfilling to have lots of different projects happening and having my brain stretched in lots of different directions, I guess.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Now, I know when you were at John Monash School, I had an opportunity to come along and have a look at some of the stuff that you were doing there. There were two things that really intrigued me while I was there. And especially being able to sit in on one of those emerging sciences online school sessions. There's many S's in that. But but it was quite remarkable when we think about the idea that learning doesn't have to happen in one spot. And the places, like I had to actually Google places that you were connecting with. Within Australia, I didn't even realise the reach that it had. But what was that impact actually like for students and for the teachers who were I don't want to say delivering, because although we talk about online as being delivering, it was actually more than that. It was around really interactive and being part of a group and a community who was solving problems.
Mm. Absolutely. And I think you've actually hit the nail on the head, because I would have a lot less grey hair and be kind of a lot less stressed if I had have just said, when we got a pretty small amount of funding to run a pilot project, which was the start of this, and it was an NBN-funded project. So we had to prove that you needed national broadband network to do these amazing things in education. And ironically, we proved that you could do some of these things over mobile and still have fantastic learning. It wasn't so much about the technology, it was about what we did with it. And I think it would have been much easier if we just said, let's record a bunch of science videos, stick them online, call them a MOOC, and brilliant, that's it. You know, that would have been it. It would have been done. But we said, no, let's look at the best kind of practices that we know are happening in real physical classrooms. And let's take a constructivist approach to learning in science, and let's see how the hell we do that in an online community. So we just kind of, it was a no-brainer to go with Google Apps, or G Suite as we now call it, but Google Apps was an easy way to get kids collaborating and working on things together. And then we had a video solution, which is pretty good. It's pretty good. it let us down a couple of times, but overall it was it worked well. And essentially we had live lessons, so two periods a week, and kids would enroll for those lessons. But the beauty of that was we had kids from like Eden Hope and Mallacoota and way up north, all over, I guess, Victoria, which I thought was I still think is a massive place. And then I look at Queensland. But yeah, Victoria is actually really small. But you get all these kids who live hundreds of kilometers apart, and they're in the same virtual space at the same time, and they are able to interact and work with some fantastic teachers at John Monash, who, to be very fair to them, and I'm sure they won't mind me saying this, were very challenged in the early days. Like, how the hell do you do this online? How do you make it a really, really great experience? But the really powerful thing is we kind of worked through a lot of that, and we worked on different pedagogical approaches and how do we get, you know, through provocation, get the kids really thinking, getting them collecting some real life data in terms of kind of citizen science stuff. And then we kind of knew that we could use the power of online to, I know lots of people use the example of, you know, you can go and take part in a lecture from someone from Harvard or something. So the world's expert in something can lecture you over video on YouTube. And that's pretty cool. But we went kind of one step further and we said, well, let's not have them lecture, but let's have them take part in the lesson. So we kind of threw out our feelers and we found some wonderful academics, mainly from different universities, who were interested in being part of this. And our warning to them was, this is not a lecture. This is a lesson. This is a time we're together. It's a community of learning. And we want really constructed activities and constructivist activities. And we had wonderful people like Marion from Monash, who was one of she's actually a geology professor, Marion Anderson. But she was part of the NASA's survey team when they surveyed Mars of where to land the rover. So she came in, because she was up the road, she came into the studio and took part in the lesson with us on a few occasions. And she shared some anecdotes and she shared some challenging questions for the kids. And the kids, most importantly, asked her some really fascinating questions. But we still weren't satisfied. And we thought, well, having people physically come in is great, but let's connect further out. And what my favorite lesson that I was ever part of was a guy called Eric Mamajek from University of Rochester in New York State. So Professor Eric Mamajek. And he is an astrophysicist, and he discovered a planet which has a ring system 200 times bigger than Saturn's ring system. And not only did he kind of jump online, and he was working with the kids and talking about all this interesting stuff around planetary science, but he was like, oh, my God, I'm so excited. I've just got all of this data from one of our radio telescopes. Let me just dump it into a Google spreadsheet and you can have a look at it. And kind of, we were like, wow, this is so cool. So kids who are passionate about science and really wanted to do things differently were and are still able to connect together with other kids who are interested in that area. Some wonderful teachers at John Monash, and I guess not most importantly, but very interestingly, experts from anywhere in the world. And I think that, you know, in terms of what technology can do for us, is a pretty good example of that power.
Yes, fantastic. So just centering or coming back to the company that you started, Unstuck Learning Design, I was wondering if you know, in the pre-conversation that we had, we spoke about things like, you know, curriculum and managing curriculum and being a bit like playing Tetris. And I was just wondering if you'd like to sort of extrapolate on that a little bit more for us.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the analogies I think that has really helped me to understand, I was teaching for 15 years, so I have like a good understanding of what it feels like to be in that position. But to really kind of understand and empathize with what teachers feel like and what they feel like job is, I kind of use that analogy of Tetris. And these things, these blocks keep dropping down on top of us and things, you know, oh, you've got to teach literacy, you've got to teach numeracy, you've got to teach social emotional well-being, you've got to teach global competency, you've got to teach digital technology curriculum. All of these things, if we perceive them as things which are on top of what we do, then we're going to lose the game of Tetris because it'll just build up, and we get game over. And we've probably seen that a little bit, I think, and teachers get a fatigue around that. And so a lot of my work with Unstuck Learning is I'm really putting all of my energy into finding out how we make those horizontal connections that allow us to win at Tetris. And one of the kind of, for me, which has been a really exciting and really interesting part of my work, is looking at how do we take things like project-based learning, design thinking, inquiry-based learning, which are all really just different flavors of student-centered learning. So it's all, you know, that's all they really are. They're just processes. And one of the, I've been working with a wonderful chap called David Price, who is, his book Open, How We Will Live, Learn and Work in the Future is an awesome read. And he is, Innovation Unit in the UK, and does a lot of work looking at project-based learning. So we sat down, and weirdly, like I'm going to say probably 20 years older than me, although I look probably a little bit older than him. We're 20 years apart, but we're from the same town, and we went to the same school, the same junior school and the same secondary school, and never knew each other until I met him when I was back in the UK teaching, and he was doing some really interesting work around projects. And then we kind of reconnected recently, and we decided that we were going to try and help teachers by giving them processes that might help them to win this game of Tetris and to make horizontal connections. So one of the processes we have worked on, and, you know, there's the whole Austin Kleon, steal like an artist, there's no original idea, is we've taken the best of what we've seen and we've kind of tried to smash it together. So it's a big focus, as you guys know and all of your listeners will know, on STEM or STEAM, or if you want humanities in there, you kind of get an IKEA-flavored STEAM. So whatever you want, it's just got all of that kind of stuff in it. And we've taken design thinking and we said, right, we think design thinking is a really pretty good process for kids to learn and to work through. And we said that for us, and there's some, not to spoil my keynote, but there will be, I hope, something interesting in there, which is some work by a lady called Mary Imadino Yang, where she has done MRI scans of the brain. And she says that she has MRI scans that prove that you cannot think deeply about things which you don't care about, which is a terrible hanging preposition, but it's nonetheless, you can't think deeply about things that you don't care about. And that for me is like, that just totally made sense. So we said, well, let's take design thinking, let's take something that kids might care about. And we decided to focus on social innovation. How do I make the world around me a better place? And we said, and let's look at STEM. Let's actually take STEM as a kind of underlying bunch of mindsets. It's certainly not a subject. We kind of said it's actually a way of doing things, a bunch of mindsets, a bunch of skill sets. And we put this together in a process which is very similar to design thinking, but essentially it starts off with find a socially important problem. And that could be anything from litter in your school. It could be quality of water. We've done a really nice one around helping elderly people remain independent. So whatever the social problem is, you know, you find that as a community and find one that really matters to you. And the next section is to actually go through in what's known in kind of the design thinking terms as empathy. But we decided, and you get ready for this, we decided to go for STEMpathy. What that means is that essentially it's not just, you know, empathy is often, oh, we'll go and do an interview or we'll go and do some observation. It's like, well, how do we actually use mathematical skills in particular and scientific inquiry skills to get that data which supports the empathy, which actually supports the idea that this is an important problem? So we did things like we ran a design sprint on waste. And so if you go on Cool Australia, which is a wonderful website, if you haven't used it, Cool Australia allows you to it has a bunch of resources around, mainly around the environment, but there's a reading task on there which has this statistic of, which is when you throw away one recycling bin worth of waste, of kind of packaging and things, upstream of that one bin, everything that's gone into making the packaging you're throwing away would fill 70 other bins. So the stuff you're putting out to recycle has already created 70 bins of other waste. And when you kind of share that with kids, they kind of go, oh my God, this is really important. And so we do like infographics and taking data and how do you represent that data? How can you use units of measurement, which are maybe different to cubic what we're doing, liters or volume or weight. How can you do something like 70 bins? I can visualize what 70 bins of rubbish might look like. So using really a deep and some, I think, quite powerful STEM skills, particularly the science and math bit at this point, to understand the problem. And then we have to actually write up a state of the problem report, which might be an infographic, might be a presentation. But before you can ideate lots of interesting solutions, you actually have to scientifically and back everything up with data, say, this is an important problem. Here's the data that shows that. And then it gets into that more classical design thinking of, okay, let's ideate, let's prototype, and let's share and enact what our solutions are. And so for us, we're trying to find ways to bring together and to really tackle in a more holistic way the curriculum, in inverted commas. Sorry, I just talked a lot there.
That's fantastic.
And we love the fact that, like, you really delved into a little bit there. What people can expect from your keynote is around this idea of, I think we're all grappling with, like, that STEM for me is one of those things at the moment. We hear STEM as being a pronoun for so many things, and we're talking about how we need to be doing STEM and we need to be doing this, and it's turned into this word that that we all want to be doing, and we know as educators and as especially as people who are really interested in digital technologies that we want to be exposing our kids to. But it's around, what are those real world problems and real world things that we delve into? So it's about taking it beyond that the acronym that it is. So it's
absolutely,
and I can't speak highly enough of that, the David Price's book Open, which just speaks to that exact same concept, you know, about looking at project-based learning and how you can, as you said, Chris, looking at how you can bring the learning laterally across and draw it all in through the projects. It's a fabulous book.
And I think what the point we try to make really strongly, and it's actually, you know, between you, I, and your listeners, it's sometimes a little bit overwhelming to work with somebody like David. So we've run these workshops together, and we've done this a few times now, because I think he's like I'm so in awe of his work and his thinking. And to sit down with him and actually kind of tackle some of these things, he's a wonderful thinker, and okay, my role in this is, all right, these are great ideas. They're incredible. How do we concretely transform that into something that teachers can pick up and use in our daily practice to help us, you know? And my wife's a French teacher, and she keeps me very, very grounded. And, you know, it's wonderful to read all of these things and to watch Ken Robinson talks and all that kind of stuff. But what are you actually doing to help teachers deliver on this? You know, how are we actually empowering teachers? And just a really quick anecdote was in this session I was running with David 2 weeks ago. Now, we kind of did a post activity, what kind of questions still remain. So we did a 2-day workshop, which was awesome. And on the end of the first day, we said, what are the really important questions you still have? Thinking we'd done a really great job. And one of the posts, it said, so how often should I teach STEM and for how long? And so, and my answer to that was like, you should teach it every day for exactly 37 minutes. And that will be it. And that's kind of the misconception, I think, about STEM is it's come from above. It's come from a department or an office's kind of bureaucracy is telling us we need to be more STEM. But the reality is we know that it's simply developing the skill sets and mindsets and tool sets that young people need to tackle those big problems in the world and to be really successful. And not just preparing them for the future, but really preparing them for now, you know, equipping them for being great learners right now, as opposed to.
And I think that's really important, that idea that we really do, like as educators, we get, not only do we get sort of bombarded by all the things that we should be doing, but we get mixed up in that. And it's really nice to hear that sort of clear view into actually when we say that, oh, we should be doing STEM, there are actually things that we can be doing and that are really purposeful and meaningful to us as educators and moving that forward. So I think that's a really amazing thing that you're doing.
It's good, and it's great. And you know what? I'm really privileged because I guess I took a bit of a risk leaving a school, and I was very comfortable and had a wonderful job, and John Marsh is a wonderful school. And taking that risk to then say, you know what, if I give myself a little bit of time, I can help to synthesize, I hope, a lot of what's going around and going on and help people to find solutions. Because like I say, I'm married to, I think, the best French teacher in the world. And she her reality is incredibly busy. I never have enough time. So many demands on us. And really, at the heart of it, we want to do the best job we can for the students that we and the children that we're working with. And if I can help in any way to make that easier and kind of give some processes and some ways of doing things, then for me, that's a really fulfilling job.
That's, and I love doing it. I think it's fantastic. And I know that many of our listeners out there are really thinking about things that they can do when they're hearing these buzzwords and they're hearing all stuff that we have to be doing. But actually what we really want to do as educators is make it meaningful. So you all have an opportunity, listeners, to catch Chris talking about that at the DigiCon conference on the 26th and 27th of July 2018. We're still just working into the fact that we're in 2018, but yes. So July 26, 27, registrations are now open and you are able to go off to the DLTV website and register for that now. And there's many things happening over that weekend that will really support the stuff that you're saying, Chris. So thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Absolute pleasure. I look forward to meeting a lot of your listeners in real life at DigiCon. And as I say, I think, you know, the most important things that organizations like DLTV can do is to say, we know there's a lot of stuff out there. Let us help you to focus on what's really, really important. And we can synthesize a lot of this information and we can bring it together and help it, help you to package it up into something that is doable, yeah, meaningful, exactly, and will help kids learn.
So that actually brings me to a couple of events that we have coming up. So we have a BCE Computing Day that will work on a collaborative professional learning day, working with computing informatics and software development. So that's happening on the 5th of March, and you can go along to the DLTV website to find out more about that. And something else, actually, something that I'm really interested in is Python for first-time coding teachers. So people who are interested in learning about Python, we've got an amazing presenter who's going to come along and talk about that on the 27th of April. Of course, DigiCon that's coming up. I must say, within DLTV, we are really, really excited about DigiCon already. There's so many amazing speakers like yourself, Chris, that are just really going to inspire us and not only inspire, but actually give us things that we can take back into our classrooms or into our schools or just even to things to think about that we can really draw on some of those ideas, and especially around like the idea of like curriculum Tetris, how we can manage that. So I think it's a really great 2 days. And the fact that you get to meet people like Chris in person, who's going to be there over the 2 days. And it's a really great opportunity to build that network in people that you've not only met online or talked to, but actually talking to in person is a really great time. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly socializing the learning with your peers and your colleagues. Last year's DigiCon was in a fabulous atmosphere, which is, you know, meeting new and old people as well, people who I'd seen in previous DigiCons, came back, and reacquainting ourselves with those people again was just a fabulous experience. And to hear their stories, either as a presenter or even just sharing the occasion of being inside or with someone, another presentation was
so a thanks, Chris, experience. For being with us tonight. We're so excited about DigiCon. I must admit, like, I haven't caught up with you for a while now. We've had a long-standing online connection, but it's been a while since I've caught up with you face to face, so I'm looking forward to seeing you at DigiCon.
Me too, and thank you so much for having me, guys, and see you in a couple of months. Yeah. This is going to be happening very, very soon. It's going to be here in Flash.
And winter coats out soon enough.
Well, yeah, and thanks, Chris. If like this podcast just clearly demonstrates what a wonderful keynote it's going to be, so I'm very excited.
All right, Andrew, till next time.
All right, see you later. Till next time, which I do believe, yes, hopefully will be next week. Yay.
Bye.
All right, see ya.